From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in February when a new report was released regarding police accountability in Rochester. That report was compiled by Ted Forsyth and Barbara Lacker Ware. Barbara, a grant writer by trade, Ted, among other things, a full-time activist as well. And their goal was to analyze the way complaints are handled in this city and determine whether citizens are getting a fair hearing when it comes to police actions. They determined that the answer is no, not even close. They titled their report, "The Case for an Independent Police Accountability System." In that 111-page report, they look at other police departments that handle complaints differently. But in Rochester, Forsyth and Lackerware point out that only 2% of cases were sustained, spanning from 2002 to 2015. Individual officers were almost never disciplined. Many complaints, most, are dismissed. Well, former police chief Jim Shepard is running for mayor, and he has defended the way police have been held accountable. He has said there are misunderstandings about complaints, but Shepard has acknowledged that the public really doesn't trust the process anymore, so he has endorsed at least some concept of a change. This hour, we wanted to hear directly from the people who compiled the report, and I can tell you that having talked to people in politics, it's a mayoral campaign year, city council, just about everybody I bump into at some point or another in the last couple of months has had this report printed out, and they're toting it around. What they think about it's another matter, but we're going to talk to Ted and Barbara about that. So first of all, Ted, Barbara, thank you for being here and sharing your work and your time with us. It's nice to have you.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the beginning on how this all came together here. What sparked the desire to write this comprehensive report and create the case for an independent police accountability system? What's the process?
So Barbara and I are part of a group called Enough is Enough. We formed in 2013 after a man was thrown out of his motorized wheelchair and beat up by the police on the west side.
That's Benny War.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, we started sort of walking through the process with people who were criminal defendants in cases and trying to help them demystify the legal process, what their options were, and just sort of be supportive, give them a place to come and feel some support if they felt like there was something done to them that shouldn't have been done by the police. That group was going, and that was where we were at. And then we started talking about bigger issues like the repeal of State Law 50A, which protects the personnel files of police officers. So we don't even know what the disciplinary records are of some of the officers. And then at the same time, we were kind of interested in this 50-year demand for a review board with teeth, a review board that actually could do something about the problem of police misconduct in Rochester. And then I'll pass it to Barbara.
And then we started working in 2014 with the Coalition for Police Reform, which had a campaign for public safety and a campaign for police accountability. And one of their prongs of that campaign was to have a civilian review process that was independent. And so we started doing research, and Ted has done research all the way back 50 years to the problems in Rochester with police accountability all the way to the 1960s. And there have been various processes that have started and stopped and, for various reasons, not met, a very high standard of real police accountability. So we decided to look at the past 15 years, because that's all we could get our hands on, was the past 15 years of annual reports of the Center for Dispute Settlements Civilian Review Board, their past 15 years of their annual reports, and then also the Rochester Police Department's Professional Standards Section annual reports, which is the Professional Standards Section is the Internal Affairs Department of the Police Department. So we started looking at those and then comparing them, and that's what the report really does. We examine what's happened in the past, what the current system is, and then we look at we compare what they've found, what the findings have been, and we can go into, if you want, how they reached those findings and what the current process is. And we found some pretty startling failures in the system.
All right, so as we go throughout the hour, listeners, we will eventually get to their proposals for what should be done differently. But let's take a look at what you called failures, what you found about how police accountability and police conduct was handled. And you used the word failure. So what are some of the examples of what you found that stood out to you, Barbara?
Well, over the past 15 years, we found that Can I describe first how the process works?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, so what happens if you have a complaint against a police officer is you can either bring it to the Center for Dispute Settlement and make a complaint, or you can bring it to the Professional Standards Section, which I'm going to abbreviate PSS. So you can bring it either to the police, PSS, or to the Center for Dispute Settlement, CRB. Either way, you're going to then go to the PSS office and be interviewed by the police and make a formal complaint, and they're going to interrogate you, basically, and ask you questions. And then they're going to do an investigation where they're going to interview witnesses, view videotape, knock on doors, and then they will make a finding about your complaint. And any of the complaint can have any of a number of different allegations. For instance, did the officer hit you, kick you, swear at you, tase you, you know, pepper spray you, any one of them.
But it's not all physical in nature, right?
Right. It can be discourtesy, swore at you, you know, any, or it can be a procedural complaint.
Mm-hmm. Like they didn't give you a complaint, you know, they didn't write up a complaint when you requested one or something.
Right.
Like
okay.
That.
So those are the broad range of reasons that people would file this complaint.
Right.
And they bring it often to the police to investigate the police.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. Either way, if they bring it to the CRB, that still they still have to be interrogated by the PSS, or they say interviewed. Then they will make findings. So the four findings that they can make are exonerated, meaning that they don't think that the police were wrong, that they were justified in what they did.
Well, when you say they, are we talking CRB or are we talking police?
The first investigation, or the only investigation, but the first people to look at it is the PSS.
Okay, that's the police.
So they have investigating officers who do these investigations of your complaint.
Okay, and then, so four possibilities. Exonerated speaks for itself. What
right.
else?
Sustained, which means that they believe that the complaint is justified and that the officer did engage in misconduct. Unprovable, which means they think it can't be proved either way. And unfounded, which means they think it didn't happen at all. So they make a finding on each of the allegations. So there might be as many as 10 allegations within a specific complaint. They make their findings, and then they give that whole investigative package to the Civilian Review Board, a panel of three people who meet in the basement of City Hall and go over that investigation. They don't do their own investigation. And then they make findings, which are the same type of findings, based on the investigation that the police gave them.
Who are those three people?
Those three people are the members of the Civilian Review Board, who are people who have been trained by the Center for Dispute Settlement, and they have to be trained as mediators. They have to be state-certified mediators to be on the Civilian Review Board, which we don't really understand why that's required. It's not required by any other civilian review agency in the country. And then they have to do a certain number of mediations, and then they get trained with 30 to 40 hours of training, and then they are chosen to be on a specific review panel.
But it's important to point out here that they're not doing their own investigation. They're taking what is given to
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. Right.
So then that three-person board does what, Barbara?
Then they make their own findings based on the findings of based on the investigation of the PSS. And then those two sets of findings go to the chief of police. And then the chief of police, or his or her surrogate, which could be a deputy or even a sergeant, then makes the final determination of findings, and then that is what is determined what will happen to the officer. And so what we found in looking at 15 years of this is that there were 1,173 complaints over the past 15 years made by civilians in use of force. We only looked at use of force. Mm-hmm. And of those 1,173, the chief of police only sustained 23 of those complaints, which results in 2%. That's 2% that the chief of police sustained. The Civilian Review Board only sustained 5%, and the PSS only sustained 3%. And those are very, very low numbers. And
I mean, maybe the police would tell you. I mean, I don't know exactly what police have told you. Maybe they would tell you that they think most complaints are not founded, and that they think that reflects the accuracy that police, when they are charged or when there are allegations of brutality or use of force that's inappropriate, that that's unfounded. What have the police told you about that?
Well, they, no matter what case we talk to them about, they always have a reason why their actions were justified.
Benny War, for example.
Any mm-hmm. pick any case,
yes.
and they will tell you they were justified. And
so one out of every 50 complaints regarding use of force gets sustained, is what you found.
Right, 2%.
One out of 50.
Right. And 2%, if you want to compare it around the country, that's what Chicago has. 2% of Chicago's police chiefs have sustained. And you know how bad the reputation of the Chicago police are.
What about Syracuse?
Well, Syracuse is a whole nother story. They completely revamped their entire system in 2011, 2012. They brought in a new administrator for a whole new system. They have an 11-member board, a paid administrator. They do investigations. And over the past 4 years, their average for use of force complaints sustained is 26%.
So 2% here, 26% there.
Exactly.
Yep.
Okay. Do you view that as something approaching fair or ideal?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what we would aspire to, at least feel like we have a system that gives people a fair hearing. And I think people don't feel like they get a fair hearing. You know, it ends up being, we feel, from what we've heard from people, is that their investigations are very inadequate. You know, they're not really investigating fully in terms of really digging in and finding out what happened.
Now, listeners, what I want to do now is listen to some of what former Rochester Police Chief Jim Shepherd said about this. He is running for mayor. He, of course, is not police chief anymore, but he was the chief for roughly 3 years, 2010 to 2013, and, of course, worked in the department for many years, very familiar with this process. And I think it's fair to say that Jim Shepherd was, he defended the process. At one juncture, you know, the question came up, well, how many complaints were sustained when you were the chief, 2010 to 2013? Barbara, do we know that answer?
Depending on whether you look at the CRB
right.
list or the PSS list, because those don't always match up, and that's another question, I think it was either 0% or like 0.3%.
I mean, it's even
like
lower
that.
Than the average.
Yeah.
And it might even be zero. And he disputed that it was zero, but he did want to weigh in on how the process works and why he thinks that sometimes there's a misunderstanding about this. So let's listen to what Jim Shepherd said about police accountability and review.
Any number of cases were sustained by my office and then supported by the civilian review and by the chief's office. And I'm sure that there's more cases than what has been cited relative to what was sustained during my tenure as chief. So the process is to find the truth. And, you know, a lot of times when there's complaints and, you know, this is one of the things that I think is most frustrating for civilians is the fact that if you make an allegation against an officer and it's just your word against his, in our process, unless there's some other evidence that's going to come to light, it is going to be unprovable just based on the nature of the process. And so that's the majority of instances of what occurred. Then also in terms of use of force, you know, a complainant may say that excessive force was used, and our investigation may determine that inappropriate force was used or unnecessary force was used, because I think there's differences between the terminology. You know, an example I would give you, if somebody were to hit you, push you, would that be excessive? No, that might be inappropriate, might be unnecessary. If somebody were to hit you with a nightstick 14 times under circumstances, that may be excessive. And so I think we have to look at the totality of the complaint as opposed to just lumping them under a certain circumstance and saying you never found a sustained complaint relative to an excessive force investigation.
Do you think most complaints against police are frivolous?
It's not a matter of being frivolous. It's a matter of what I found is about courtesy. You know, a lot of the complaints are not about an officer using force. It's really about his tone, his language, the way he looked around your house, maybe in disgust based on the fact of your living conditions. Those are the things that really upset people is that where they want to come forward and say something. The reality of it is that, you know, in my experience of being in professional standards section, being a chief of police, force is not the driver of complaints. The driver of complaint is how did that officer talk to me, what he said to me. He cursed at me, depending on the circumstances and the ability to find evidence to support it, that would determine the outcome. And I took great pride in finding truth.
That is former Rochester Police Chief Jim Shepherd. So a lot to weigh in with there. And Ted, I'll start with you. You want to offer some broad reactions to what the former chief had to say there?
Yeah, I you know, looking at the reports for both PSS and the CRB, they talk about allegations of force. They don't delineate between unnecessary or inappropriate or
excessive.
Yeah, right. So I think that's a bit of a red herring on the former chief's part there.
You think it's a dodge?
I think so. Yeah, I do. Because we were looking at allegations of force. We weren't, you know, based on their data. So I think that's one thing to say. You know, the piece about unprovable, right? So you have one person says this happened, the police officer says this happened. So it's unprovable. So, you know, in that situation, it's never, well, you know, I don't know. It raises problems with the whole system as it is right now because it doesn't actually give the civilian any kind of standing. And the officer may have an unprovable, but they continue with their career. And if the act that was found unprovable actually happened, you know, the mechanism has found that it's unprovable and they go back on the street and who knows what happens next. You know, maybe the next one's an exonerated. So I don't know. There's a lot there with the...
Okay, Barbara, yeah. What did you make of what Jim Shepherd had to say there?
Yeah, just to follow up on the unprovable thing, I think, you know, it's the police are always saying to us, well, if it comes to a he said, she said, then it's unprovable. Well, I think that more investigation could be done. And I think if you have an investigator who really cares about what the civilians think and hearing the truth from both sides, I think you're going to find less unprovables. The other thing, he said there's a lot more cases than what we have in the report. Well, interestingly, there are a lot more. The findings or the comparison that we did of unnecessary force or excessive force by the police has about 100, almost 200 more cases than the CRB does. Well, what happened to those cases? Because the police, every time there's a complaint of excessive use of force, they're supposed to investigate it, and then the CRB is supposed to, you know,
review
that investigation. Right. So what happened to all those cases that the CRB didn't get? You know, that's a concern for transparency, and that's another reason why we want a group that has more teeth that can really see from the beginning what cases there are and be looking at them.
To be fair to Jim Shepherd, who is running for mayor, he did also say on this program that while he defended his tenure as police chief and how complaints were handled, he also understands that right now public trust is of the utmost importance. And so he is open and I think favors some kind of change in how the system works.
Yes.
And so I just kind of want to sort of put that out there that, you know, Jim Shepherd wasn't just saying it's a perfect system.
Right.
Right.
I think what he's saying is there's often more than meets the eye, and that that use of force allegations are sometimes a little bit more nuanced. And Ted, you found it to be a dodge. He might say it's not a dodge. Excessive is not the same as inappropriate. And maybe an officer grabs somebody a little more firmly than they have to, but that's not the same as excessive force that relates to, that results in injury, et cetera. And he would say we have to distinguish, don't we?
Well, I think that goes to the actual complaint and what happened. I mean, Barbara and I have sat in on some of these interviews conducted by PSS. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't feel like that's an organization that's really interested in finding out what happened. It feels like there's an organization trying to discredit your story so that it's much easier for the board to review that investigation and say, oh, it's unprovable or it's unfounded. Now, that's my anecdotal sort of understanding based on, like, you know, two or three, you know, interviews that I sat on, right?
The other thing I think in answer to your question is, you know, an inappropriate use of force can very quickly escalate to an excessive use of force. And I think one thing that we've seen with the police is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of emphasis on de-escalation. It seems like the police start out being rude and discourteous and end up going to force quickly.
Are you saying that across the board? Do you think officers are rude, sort of generally speaking?
I don't think... No, and not generally speaking,
okay.
But I think it doesn't really matter. If you can do it and get away with it, then why not do it? You know, I think there's a certain type of person that likes to be a bully. And if they're not, if that behavior is let go and even encouraged rather than discouraged, and training doesn't happen about de-escalating, then a push can easily, you know, go up the scale very quickly.
I want to ask as well a question for our guests regarding discipline, because it's one thing to say that you reviewed cases from roughly 15 years, 2001, 2002 to 2015, and what you found was essentially 2% of mm-hmm. civilian complaints were sustained. How often were officers disciplined? Barbara?
Well, we found that of those 23 times that the chief sustained, only 14 times could we find evidence of discipline having been done. And the harshest discipline that we found was 2 or 6 suspensions. Now, a suspension can be anywhere from 3 days to 60 days. So if only 14 times 6 officers were the harshest thing for excessive use of force was suspension.
Was anybody terminated?
We don't know of any terminations. There were at least one officer who resigned, but who resigned shortly thereafter, but it was for something else, or, you know, was terminated for something else. But okay. Very few, maybe 2, maybe 1 resigned and 1 terminated, but not for excessive use of force. So they kept their pension or whatever.
All right, so the short answer to that is in 15 years of the review that Barbara and Ted did, there wasn't a single case that we know for certain that a police officer in Rochester was terminated for excessive use of force.
Correct.
And there was only half a dozen suspensions in 15 years.
Despite
more than 1,100 complaints about use of force.
Right.
So, again, what Jim Shepherd is saying is people don't fully understand the process. He was comfortable with those numbers that, and that he also seemed to indicate that he thought that there were more sustained complaints than the report indicated. But your report's pretty thorough. It does seem I don't have any numbers that would contradict your report.
It uses their numbers. I mean,
okay.
So
right.
We're getting what they're offering.
Right.
So if... You know, looking at both sets of institutions that are supposed to review allegations of force, we found it pretty problematic that like 200-plus complaints somehow disappeared over the course of a year. I mean, if you have 2 institutions that are supposed to be looking at the same allegations, the same complaints, where did 200 complaints go? When we met with the police union, they had a similar situation. They wanted to go to task with us on every single case that we outlined in the report. And, you know, their argument was, I think, basically like, well, you don't have all the information. You don't understand, like, what happened here. You know, this, and Barbara and I are like, well, we have their court records. We've talked to them. Can you give us more? And the court's answer is no, because of...
And that's the other issue, is transparency. Then let us have access to the records.
Right.
And that's what we're advocating for, a police accountability board that has the same access to the records of the police department as the police do.
Let me give you an example of what Ted is talking about, because when you read this report, which we'll make sure you can access if you want, where can people find the report?
You can find it on Enough is Enough's website. That's enoughisenough.rocus.org.
Okay. enoughisenough.rocus.
No, Rocus. I'm sorry. R-O-C-U-S.
Right.
Oh, Rocus.
Okay.
Yeah,
right. .org.
That's not how I... Yeah, right.
It's just how we say it. enoughisenough.rocus.org, and we'll make sure we link to it if you want to read it yourself. But throughout the report, there are sort of text boxes with kind of anecdotal cases of what they're talking about. I'll read one of them. It's the case of Rashid Griner. On May 23rd, 2015, Rashid Griner, a young black man, and his family were at the beach listening to music. Monroe County sheriffs pulled up and asked the group to turn down their music, which they did. Then several RPD vehicles surrounded the group and told them they had to leave. When Griner asked why, he was told they looked suspicious. The group moved to a parking lot, but the police returned and told them to leave. When Griner asked for the officer's badge number, Officer Mario Masick said, "I've had enough of your mouth," and pulled out his baton. Masick hit Griner in the face, arrested and charged him with disorderly conduct and resisting arrest. He received stitches for his facial injuries. The criminal case against Griner was dismissed when the judge decided that Masick's arrest of Griner was unlawful. Officer Masick is still employed by the Rochester Police Department. Now, I read this anecdote and I think, I want more. I want to know as much as I can possibly know, because this doesn't sound good for the officer involved here.
Right.
And I also don't know, when you say he's still employed by the police department, was he suspended? Did anything happen?
We don't know.
You know, how do police feel about his actions in this case? Was he at least sort of rebuked for this in any way? And what I think I'm hearing from you, Ted, is that there were times where you were frustrated that you couldn't get more information about
correct.
Is that,
yeah.
is that correct?
Absolutely.
Because
yeah.
I certainly would like to see more in these anecdotes, but you're saying you're working with what they were willing to give you.
Yeah, I mean, we would foil for information. We, you know, check their websites. We ask for annual reports, documentation, and, you know, we got what we got. And so, you know, that's what we have to go on. But yeah, like Barbara said, we really would like to have a far more transparent process where we can actually understand like what they're looking at, who they're looking at, why they're looking at it, what data they're using, et cetera.
My guests are Ted Forsyth and Barbara Lacker-Ware, the authors of the new report, The Case for an Independent Police Accountability System, Transforming the Civilian Review Process in Rochester, New York. We're going to get our only break of the hour. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what they would like to see change. And they have some significant structural changes in their proposals. We'll not only talk about how it would work if they if they're effective at getting these changes enacted, but what they've been hearing from Rochester Mayor Warren, from police, from the different candidates for office. It's an election year, and a lot of people running for office for city council and for the mayor are talking about this report. So much more to talk about. And if you want to join the conversation, you can do that. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Coming up in our second hour, mental health in the workplace. If you needed to take some time off for health reasons, and it was for mental health reasons, would your employer understand? Well, one CEO's response on this issue went viral last week, and it sparked a new conversation about how companies work with employees who have mental health challenges. There's still a lot of stigma. We'll talk about how employers are working with it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. In our second half hour, we're going to work through some of your questions and comments. I see a few on Twitter. If you want to call the program, you can. And we're going to talk about what Barbara and Ted have proposed to change the system of police accountability in Rochester. But first, I also want to clarify something, because I did bring up the fact that we're in the midst of campaigns, a mayoral election campaign, city council. A lot of people involved in local government are reading this report. And again, I don't know what necessarily they think. Barbara and Ted are not here to endorse anybody. And I know you've probably heard more from some candidates than others here and there, or maybe people are reaching out. They want at least to access it. But Barbara, I'll clarify for our listeners, you're not here to endorse, right?
Correct.
And that's an important point as well. But do you want this report to be at the center of discussion?
Absolutely.
Tell me what you want to see happen here.
We would like to see the candidates, you know, answer the question, are you for, you know, this proposal? And if you're not, why? Or are there certain sections of it that, you know, that the ordinance that Ted's going to tell you about are problematic to you? And if they are problematic, then how would you achieve the result that we're looking for?
Okay, Ted?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. We want people to know that there's this proposal out there. We want people to, you know, sign off that they are going to be police accountability voters, that they want to make this an election issue. It's been sent to all the candidates. You know, I think the purpose here is really to make this a front and center issue and, you know, get something passed that answers that 50-year demand for a review system that actually has the ability to do something
okay.
in Rochester.
All right, let me grab our first phone call. It's from Frank, and I think he's calling from CDS. Is that right, Frank?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Yes. I did have a question. We're from the Center for Dispute Settlement. We run the current Civilian Review Board, and actually, I authored the last eight of the annual reports that are referenced in the police accountability report. And I wanted to ask Mr. Forsyth why he did not include the findings for sustained complaints that were generated by internal investigations, and specifically excluded that from the data in the report.
Okay, stay on the line, Frank. Ted?
Hi, Frank. We were looking specifically at civilian-generated complaints, and that was our proposal. That was what we focused on, was looking at how people, when they feel that misconduct has happened, like they go through this process, and what's the outcome for them? You know, if we're talking about trust and integrity in the police and in this process, then it's really important that people feel that something's being done. And so we understand that there is internal review that happens, and, you know, but everyday people, you know, don't understand like what that even is. So,
yeah. So I mean, Civilian Review Board, to be effective, in my opinion, has to include all the data, and it has to also address officers' behavior, whether that's generated by a citizen complaint or not. So, internal complaints are often generated by a high-profile incident. They may have video where a person doesn't come forward for whatever reason, officer-involved shootings where there's not the complainant, hostage situations, use of paramilitary equipment. We want to evaluate all of that conduct for an officer, an off-duty misconduct. So when you look at adding the data into your incomplete report, you will acknowledge that, just using the example of the Syracuse in 2015.
Our report is not incomplete. Our report answered the questions that we were asking, which was, what is the result of civilian complaints? We're not police officers to investigate internally, and we know that your numbers look better if you have the internal numbers in there, but that was not our purpose.
And hold on, Frank, and let me just also offer, because I'm sort of this... I'm just reading the report as somebody who's kind of an outsider here. You're bringing up hostage situations and officer-involved shootings. Those are the major ones that, of course, they would be investigated, and they're sort of the obvious ones here. So I'm not that's necessarily the same category as a civilian offering a complaint about conduct.
Exactly.
It's about officer behavior when they interact with the citizenry. Those are critical situations that you want to monitor. And when you look at those results, an example for 2015, in just use of force complaints, we had a 21% sustained rate.
That's for 1 year, Frank. We're talking about 15 years worth of data. You're talking about 1 year,
and
that includes information that we decided was not relevant to what citizens are bringing forward in their complaints against police.
And to be fair, Frank, you're combining internal and initiated investigations and civilian complaints in your 21.6% number. So that's correct.
And that's why I feel it's...
But it's disingenuous to say that.
What you also don't cite is the findings for procedural and courtesy and conduct complaints.
Again,
those are all precursors to evaluating an officer's behavior when they interact with the public. And if those are unaddressed or unimportant in your report, and I have to be real candid here, I believe that what you selected was only data that you believed supported your premise.
No, it was data related to the concerns of civilians, which is use of force.
That's what people deal with on a
day-to-day
basis.
That's what people wanted to know.
Now, hold on one second. Now, let me also, to understand Frank's point, I think what I'm hearing from Frank and the Center for Dispute Settlement is that the reason they feel the report is incomplete is, yes, it may be bigger, more obvious cases, hostage situations or officer-involved shootings or internal investigations that begin for various reasons, not brought by a civilian, but that still relates to police conduct, and that your report paints a picture that the Rochester Police Department is sort of pretending that officers never do anything wrong, whereas if you take a look at the entire scope of data, CDS would say, no, there's a lot more sustained complaints out there, and they just don't usually happen to come from civilians.
Thank you for clarifying, Evan.
Is that fair, Frank?
That's fair.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly right.
But Frank, taking what you perceive to be their incomplete report, are you concerned that such a low number of civilian complaints have any sustained rate and almost no discipline record?
Well, I disagree with the discipline record, too, because I've been doing oversight for law enforcement for about 15 years, but actually writing these on staff and writing these reports for the last 8 years, and I'm personally aware of much more discipline than that, terminations and suspensions. I believe that the information that they are giving in the report is inaccurate.
Why weren't those listed in the annual reports then that you release every year?
The findings are released by PSS.
The discipline...
You just said there were many terminations and disciplinary actions taken that are not addressed in our report. So why aren't those in the, if they're not in the PSS report, as you just said, why isn't CDS making stink about that?
If an officer chooses to take a downgrade or take a retirement in lieu of being terminated, those things are not considered discipline.
Right.
Exactly. So that prevents transparency. We're just going with the data that is recorded in the reports. And if there is more information that we should have had, then that again makes the case for transparency, which is what we're advocating for.
So let me make.
So for you to say, well, I know about this, that doesn't matter if the public doesn't know about it. And it's not transparent for the public to feel that justice is being served.
So let me clarify too, because I know that there have been letters to the editor by Mr. Forsyth saying that we are now making recommendations for enhancing the program. We're a little late to the party. Well, in actuality, we made program enhancement recommendations to City Council 5 months before the police accountability report actually came out, and we are our recommendations attempt to address just that transparency. We're certainly aware that this is a changing and growing field, and that the public's expectations of what an oversight organization should be are changing. I mean, we're well aware of the national conversation in this area.
Your first recommendation, Frank, is rename the current Civilian Review Board to Independent Civilian Review Board to emphasize that the CRB is independent. How is it that your first recommendation is to change the name to make it sound like it's more independent? It seems like your first recommendation would be to provide more accountability for civilians who are not getting their just dues.
Yes, if you let me answer that question, actually that is only in response to the misinformation that your report puts out about the Center for Dispute Settlement not being.
But you said that your recommendations came five months before
our report.
So you can't have it both ways.
Yes, but you've been complaining about that for a long time.
Right. So you knew we were complaining. So you came out with that we were coming out with this report. So you made your own recommendations ahead of time.
I mean, honestly, these recommendations come out of the Ricky Bryant case and the Lentoria Parker case, where City Council, I'm presuming, or the mayor, as CDS, to present something, to make changes.
No, you're incorrect. These recommendations went to the mayor and city council in October of 2016, months before your report.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying after the Ricky Bryant case and after the Lentoria Parker case happened, where there were public outcry about these acts.
I have to step in here because I want Barbara and Ted to at least explain some point before the hour's over, and I've got to get other listeners in about what they do propose. But before we do that, let me just ask Frank before he goes, because Frank, thank you for taking the time to call and weigh in with your side of it. I just want to ask you, Frank, are you still there? We lose Frank?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I just want to ask you, do you think that in our community we have a particular problem of civilians not having their complaints heard when it comes to use of force by police, yes or no?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't. And I think they get a fair and independent hearing.
Okay, and so for a 2% sustain rate that the investigation by Ted and Barbara found, do you dispute that 2% number of a sustain rate on civilian-generated complaints on use of force?
That's the chief's finding. I dispute the CRB findings.
Okay. Yes. But it's still certainly true that civilian-generated complaints, whether it's 2% or 5% or whatever, the vast majority are not sustained. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And that's true across the board. If you look at Civilian Review Board findings across the board, we have made recommendations back in 2013 to actually have independent agencies investigate high-profile cases of an officer-involved shooting or one where there's significant injuries. That's a recommendation we made 4 years ago.
Okay, and so bottom line is, do you think most civilian-generated complaints about police use of force in Rochester are frivolous?
No, I don't. I don't.
But
I don't believe they're frivolous, no.
I'm just confused because the vast majority are not sustained. So they're based on what? What are the vast majority of those complaints based on, do you think?
Well, you know, if a person believed that there was excessive force used, that needs to be thoroughly investigated to make sure that the officer did not do something inappropriate given the totality of the circumstances. The low sustained rate is I think what maybe Jim Shepherd have alluded to. It's the we use the preponderance of evidence standard. You have to have a little bit more than 50% to prove or disprove that. That is often problematic, but I think that problem is going to be addressed in large part by the introduction of body-worn cameras by police officers.
Okay.
That is going to be evidence that will tip those scales in one direction or the other. So I see that the unprovable rate is going to really drop by the introduction of this new body-worn camera evidence.
Frank, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to call the program. I appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank
That's
you.
Frank. It's calling from the Center for Dispute Settlement. And before I grab one more call, and then we're going to work through your solutions, your proposals here. Barbara and Ted, do you agree with Frank that body-worn cameras, relatively new in this community, could that really offer a kind of change and more accountability that, you know, the early part of your reports, those years where there were no body-worn cameras, the vast majority, I assume, or maybe the entirety of it.
The vast majority of the years, yeah.
Exactly. So,
I think
so,
everything.
So yeah. Do you think now body-worn cameras is a big stride forward in accountability here?
If the policies are will allow for the police to actually be held accountable. Right now, we know of a group within the Coalition for Police Reform that's working with the police department about the policies, because right now, the courts are even finding, public defenders are finding that the police can say, oh, fell off, oh, forgot to turn it on, oh, it turned off, I thought I turned it on, it didn't turn on. You know, lots of reasons why, you know, you're not seeing the footage because they're somehow not making it. The police aren't being held accountable if they forget or it doesn't work. They're not being held accountable for it to make sure that the camera is actually on and showing, you know, or they, oh, I didn't turn it on soon enough. So you don't see the before, oh, well, you didn't see what happened before, which right. is the reason why I had to hit this guy. Well,
and then we're told to believe the police narrative so, to back up their body camera footage.
So there's a lot of policy work that has to be done to make it work.
Okay. So let's talk about what you want to see change. Take us through the system. Let's do it point by point. What should change?
So we're calling for a police accountability board. This would be an independent city agency, independent of the Rochester Police Department. It would have subpoena power. It would have independent investigative authority. It would have the power to administer discipline, impose discipline on officers who are found to have committed misconduct. And the fifth point there is we want to actually have a mechanism that can review police policies and procedures and actually make recommendations that could be implemented sooner rather than later. If
11 people on the board?
11 people, yeah.
In the initial report back in February, it called for 6 elected members of the community to the board, 4 appointed by city council, 1 appointed by the mayor. Mm-hmm. You have since amended that.
Yes.
There was some debate in the community about whether there should be elected positions. So now the update is 11-member board, nobody elected, all appointed?
Yeah, so the 4 would be appointed by city council, 1 by the mayor, and then 6 would be appointed through a community nominating process that would go through, the nominations would be confirmed by city council.
Okay.
So,
but 11-person board, and you're seeing the process there, and this board exists then, and then so let's walk through the process. We've walked through the process of that is currently in place for when mm-hmm. there is a civilian complaint. Now, if this happens, civilian comes forward with a complaint, they go directly to whom?
They can go to PSS if they want, or they can go directly to the board. They can go directly to the PAB. So the Police Accountability Board would, their investigator would take a statement, conduct an interview, and then the investigator goes and does an initial investigation. So finding evidence like surveillance camera footage or body camera footage, talking to witnesses, getting statements from people that were at the scene. We know that some organizations, private businesses, won't release certain surveillance camera footage without a subpoena. We've heard of that. So in this investigation, that investigator could come to the board and say, I need a subpoena to get this footage. Can I have it? Simple majority, they can pass that and the subpoena be written and put out. So after the investigation is complete, the investigator comes to the board, gives a brief summary of the case, and then gives a recommendation to either proceed or not, depending on the amount of evidence they've been able to find, at which point 3 members of that 11-person board are put on a panel, and they review the PSS investigation, they review the PAB investigation, and then they would also have the power to go beyond that if they felt the need to go beyond that investigation. So not just reviewing other investigations, but they have the power to actually go beyond that. That's the independent investigative authority. At that point, if they sustain the complaint, they send a letter to the chief, the complainant, the officer, city council, explaining that they've sustained the complaint, and they make a recommendation for discipline through what's called the disciplinary matrix. At that point, the chief can respond and, you know, say yay or nay. The chief can impose the discipline and accept the recommendation or not. At that point, the board could then deliberate over the chief's reasoning for why he did not, let's say, impose a discipline. And if the board agrees with the chief, that's fine. If the board doesn't agree with the chief would then have a limited amount of time to impose the discipline. So the power would be held in the hands of the civilians at that point, not in the hands of the chief of police, as it's been for 25 years.
Okay. Anything else we need to know about discipline then, or what your expectations would be if this system's in place? Your number of 2% sustained complaints would go to, what do you think, Barbara?
I think if it could go to 20-25%.
But doesn't that feel arbitrary? I mean, what are we basing that on?
The problem is there isn't a lot of data on this process because there's so many different, there are 100, 200 different civilian review processes out there in the country. And since, especially in the last 5 years, there's been a lot of movement. So, you know, I shouldn't even say 20 or 25% because we don't know. Everything is so new. Now, for an example, in Oakland just last year implemented a police accountability commission that has the disciplinary power. And so it would be interesting to see what their results end up being. I mean, hopefully in the long run, the complaints will go down because the police will start being held accountable and people will start trusting them more, and you know, there will be more cooperation in both ways. So we don't really know, but it definitely should be better than 2%.
And generally speaking, you think, at the very least, the creation of this system will create more trust in the community?
I think it can't help but create more trust in the community because the police will be held accountable. The systems, the cases, what happens, the discipline will be transparent as much as possible with the laws that we have in New York State. And people will start beginning to feel like, oh, okay, police are going to stop arbitrarily beating me up for no reason just because I'm black and poor, or brown and poor, which is what's happening. We haven't even talked about the whole idea that this comes from racial profiling.
Well, on that note, because we're down to 90 seconds, I know Brandon wants to jump in. Got to keep it tight, but go ahead, Brandon.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I was calling. It was more of traffic stops. Me being an African-American living in the city, I've been pulled over so many times, and I have got tickets that I didn't even do. For instance, I was on my way to work one day, and the cop asked me where I'm going, and I told him I'm going to work. He tells me he smelled alcohol, and I'm like, officer, I'm going to be late to work. He makes me get out the car. He searches the car and make me do all types of tests. Isn't this always the same exact officers? Another incident, I was pulled over one time, and the officer had his light shining in my face, and I told him, I said, I could barely see. So I was using my brother's car. I handed him my driver's license, but it was my brother's driver's license. And then he was like, this is not true. I said, oh, I gave you the wrong one. I apologize. He gets me out the car. He takes me to jail for criminal impersonation. And I had to take a charge for something that was an honest mistake that I didn't do. But it's like the same cops. If they're not harassing you or if they're not beating you, they give you traffic tickets and stuff that you didn't even do.
All right, Brandon, I just got to jump because we're going to be out of time. And I just want to say again, I mean, I know it's complex and some people get really sensitive about this. We want to reach out to police and we will certainly be open to having police. And Chief Simonelli and his office have been wonderful about reaching out to the community. So that door is open. We'll continue the conversation. Shane wanted to know, is there a racial disparity in complaints and sustainments?
Well, the problem is we don't have that information. It would be great if we could get that information.
Yeah. You don't know. Okay. Barbara and Ted, thank you for your time. And again, I promise not to make this political, but city council, the mayor's office, the candidates, 20 seconds. What are you hearing? Are people open to these proposals?
Most people are open to it. We've talked to a lot of the candidates, and most are open to it, and most want change.
What about Mayor Warren? What has she told you?
She has said she thinks that there is change needs to be made. And the same with Loretta Scott. Okay. And council members.
Okay, but again, Ted and Barbara are not endorsing, and they're not intending to be part of any political campaign.
Correct.
She wants, I think, she and he, they want all candidates to have this on the radar in a conversation.
Yes.
So thanks to Ted Forsyth, Barbara Lacker-Ware, The report is the case for an independent police accountability system. You can read it and see what you think yourself. We'll make sure we're linked to that, and we'll continue the conversation again, hopefully with RPD very, very soon. More connections coming up.